You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. This is a reading of a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner, entitled Eurythmy as Visible Speech, Collected Works, Volume 279, translated by Vera and Judy Compton Burnett. This is Lecture 7 of 15 lectures, entitled The Plastic Formation of Speech. The possibilities inherent in eurythmy will only be realized when the eurythmist is able to create the movements in all their detail out of the nature of speech itself. In eurythmy, it is almost as important to have an intimate understanding of the sounds of speech as it is to have a knowledge of the actual eurythmic movements. For this reason, I will show you today the way in which the plastic formation of speech can definitely influence eurythmy. Now, the plastic formative element is in the ordinary way not fully manifested, for it passes over into sound. It is the task of eurythmy to bring the plastic element to visible expression. When we direct our attention to the plastic element in the sounds of speech, and here we naturally take the consonants, for they lend themselves more particularly to plastic interpretation, imitating, as they do, the things and processes of the external world, we find that the sounds divide up into four types. First, we have the sounds which are quite definitely built up after the pattern of F or S. Then we have the sounds of the type of B, P, D, or T. When you compare the sounds of these two groups, you will find that they are completely different from one another. The S and F sounds are formed by allowing the breath stream to be blown freely outward, with the other sounds, D, T, B, and P, the breath stream is first inwardly controlled and is released much more consciously. It is not blown out in this case, but thrust out. Thus, we must distinguish between the blowing or breath sounds and the thrusting sounds or sounds of force. The nature of these two types is therefore completely different. The breath sounds yield up, as it were, the inner being of man more or less passively to the outer world. They make use of the outgoing stream of the breath in order to release the in-breathed air from the body, so that these outbreathing sounds entirely depend upon the fact that the air passes outward. Now, this breath stream always takes to itself the form, the shape of the body. It does not, however, assert itself in the outer world, but scatters itself abroad, so that the breath sounds always have the characteristic of yielding themselves up to the world outside. It is essential to grasp the character of the breath sounds and to realize that they yield themselves up to the outer world. Man allows this outer world to do as it will with him, not naturally as regards his physical body, but as regards the form which he has transmitted to the outgoing breath stream. In the case of the consonants of force, this is quite otherwise. Here we master the form given to the breath. We permeate it, as it were, with our ego. We do not permit the sound to scatter itself immediately, but compel it to retain its form for a time in the outer world. Thus, in the consonants of force, man appears as master in his relation to the outer world, so that here one cannot speak of a yielding oneself up to the outer world, but of an assertion of one's own inner being. These two types of sound comprise the great proportion of the consonants. In reality, the breath sounds express sympathy with the outer world, and sounds of force, sympathy with oneself. The breath sounds are free from egoism. The sounds of force are egotistical. We shall always find that When we make use of the consonants of force, we do so in order to express what needs to be expressed in sharp outlines. You know already that there is a strong plastic element in the German language. And now, bearing this in mind, let us take a word beginning with a consonant of force, Baum, B. You will invariably notice that a consonant of force produces the effect of sharp outlines. The breath sounds, on the other hand, will never produce such outlines. They describe the reverse of everything clear-cut and definite. For example, S in the word Sei is a breath sound. One must, of course, keep strictly to essentials when dealing with such matters. You will naturally be able to find any number of words which seem as though they should be expressed by means of sharp outlines and which, nevertheless, contain breath sounds. You will, however, usually discover that there is in such words, despite their sharp outlines, a leaning toward something indefinite, in spite of the necessity for sharp outlines, which may also be present. Now, the breath sounds are H, CH, J, SCH, S, F, W, V. The sounds of force are D, T, B, P, G, K, M, and N. These latter are all consonants of force, sounds which express the more egotistical attitude of soul, the assertion of one's own individual being, which one wishes to safeguard in the world outside. Then we have a sound which lends itself particularly well to the imitation of something which is turning, which is revolving. This is the R sound, which is produced by a vibration in the outgoing breath stream. R is the vibrating sound. Then we have another sound in which, when articulated rightly, the tongue must imitate a storm-tossed sea, L. We must make undulating movements with the tongue. L is the sound, is the wave sound. When do we need these two sounds? We need them when we wish to express not merely the merging with the outer world, nor the strengthening of the self, but something which has movement actually inherent within it. Movement and form are, of course, expressed both in the breath sounds and the sounds of force, but these sounds are not to the same degree an embodiment of self-contained movement as such. When we understand the true nature of the R sound, we find that it contains something that lies midway between the yielding up of oneself and self-assertion. The R expresses a certain reserve. It calls up a feeling of reserve in the spiritual and soul nature of man. For this reason, we express with the R sound everything which we are able to grasp and take hold of as we take hold of our own being, which, when forming a resolution, when making a resolve, raten. Resolve, rat, is a word which illustrates particularly well the special characteristic of the sound R. When we make a resolution, we turn something over and form a judgment. This feeling of turning something over in order to make a resolution is always to be found when we enter into the nature of R, so that we express with words containing the sound R those things in the outer world which have a certain similarity to this mood of turning something over and thereby forming a judgment. Thus the R sound has an egotistical quality. It does not yield up what it has created to the outer world, but retains it for itself and in itself. And the L is the sound which expresses reflection, but reflection mingled with a certain yielding tendency. One would rather listen to what is said than come to a decision for oneself. One allows someone else to decide. A feeling of waiting lies in the inner experience of L. Now the point is to bring the plastic nature of these sounds to actual eurythmic expression. The special characteristic of the breath sounds can best be shown in eurythmy by moving the body in such a way that the sounds are carried with it. Or, in other words, by trying to follow the direction of the sounds with the body. Try, for instance, to make an S, moving the body in such a way that it follows in the direction of the arms as they form the sound. Make the movement for S to begin with quite quietly. Now make it very clearly, so that one sees that you are following the movement with the body. If the movement tends in a forward direction, let the upper part of the body follow after it. If it tends backward, the upper part of the body must be thrown backward also. You must have control over the whole body and allow it to swing with the sound, to swing in the direction of the sound. Try this also with F, for example. Let the body follow after the sound. Now, we will turn to a consonant of force. Here, too, the point is to bring the nature of the sound into the movement of the body. In this case, the body must not be allowed to move, but must bring about the desired effect by means of its posture. The body must show that it intends to come to rest, to fix, as it were, the movement which is indicated by the sound. Take B to begin with. Make it just as you like, and now stiffen yourself. Stand quite still and stiffen yourself, so that one can see clearly that the sound is held. This stiffening of the body must be carried out in such a way that you actually feel it in your muscles. This inner rigidity gives to the consonants of force their special character. It is deeply interesting to consider such things. For in the breath sounds, what really comes to expression is this: I will have nothing to do with Lucifer. Everything which is luciferic must disappear. And the consonants of force express this feeling: I will hold fast to Ahriman, for if he escapes me, he will poison everything. He must be held fast. Thus the influence of Lucifer and of Ahriman has been implanted into these sounds. R can only be expressed fully when one tries to move the body gently, but with a certain swing and grace in an upward and downward direction. In order to carry out the L sound correctly, there must be a free movement of the body forward and backward, not following the movement in this case, but showing two independent activities. When making the movement for a breath sound, the body must follow the direction of the arms. It must, as it were, accompany the movement. When making the wave sound, the body must have an independent movement, free and rythmic, forward, backward, forward, backward. This rocking, which is carried out by changing the weight alternately from the heels to the toes, must be made externally visible. You will find how well you are able to do this if you imagine that you have a rod under your feet and seesaw, as it were, to and fro, keeping the rod, which you may picture as rolling slightly, midway between the toes and the heels. The best way to practice it is to swing so far forward that you nearly fall, only just retaining your balance, and then to swing so far backward that you are once more in danger of falling. If you should happen really to fall, it is of no consequence. It will only serve to impress upon you the feeling of the movement. If you practice the movement in this way, it will gradually become habit, and you will be able to make the rocking so pronounced that you only stop at the very moment of falling, so that the onlooker would be inclined to say, "How clever not to fall!" With practice, such skill may be attained in the carrying out of the L sound, that the onlooker is left with the impression, "How clever to be able to do that without falling." By such means you will be able really to enter into and grasp the whole inner character of the sounds of speech. Now we can gain a further understanding of speech and language by trying to enter into the nature of the diphthongs. The diphthongs naturally consist of a combination of two separate and essential parts. Fräulein S., will you demonstrate the movement for oi? What lies in this sound? It consists of A and U. Both these sounds are contained within the oi. but are, as it were, left uncompleted. Try to indicate an A and an U. Stop the A movement just as it is being formed. What would it become if it were formed completely? We will assume for the moment that the movement has been completed. But now, check the movement halfway. You have not yet carried it out fully. And instead of doing so, must lead it over into the U sound. What do we do when completely forming an U? The arms approach one another so closely that they actually touch. The OI movement must be carried out in such a way that the arms do not merely cross one another, as in the case of the A sound, but lie side by side. The definite contact being indicated by a feeling of trying to raise the arms up toward the head. This gives you the feeling for OI. Thus we begin to enter into the nature of the diphthongs. We bring together the two component parts, but in such a way that they are only suggested, not carried out completely. This at the same time leads you to an understanding of a very essential characteristic of speech, of sound as such. It is in the diphthongs that you can best study the transition from one sound to the next. And at this moment we must consider what kind of text is most suited to your rhythmic expression. I know of an Austrian philosopher, Bartholomaeus Carneri by name, who during the last years of his life wrote even his most difficult philosophical works in such a way that they could easily be expressed in eurythmy. This philosopher would have been driven to distraction if he had come across such a sentence as the following, for example, lebe echte Empfindungen. He would have thought it appalling. And why? He was simply disgusted when a word ending with a vowel was followed by another word ending with a vowel. He asserted that such a thing should never be allowed to occur, and that wherever possible one should avoid a vowel sound at the end of one word being followed by a vowel sound at the beginning of the next. Indeed, he went so far as to write whole articles in which he endeavored never to bring vowel sounds into juxtaposition, but always to let the transition from one word to the next be brought about by means of the consonant. When two vowels, or a vowel and a consonant, come together, and you wish to express this in eurythmy, you will find that you have to do so by means of gentle, soft movements. On the other hand, you will make the movements decided. They will become decided by themselves when one word ends and the next word begins with a consonant. It is important in eurythmy really to observe what takes place when different sounds of a different character, come together. This can best be studied in the diphthongs, for the diphthong is only truly brought to expression when the movement for the first sound is shown in its beginning and then led over into the latter part of the movement for the second sound. Bearing this principle in mind, let us now form the I sound. Let us, in the first place, make the two sounds concerned, that is to say, the A and E sounds as such. Now, try not to complete the A sound, but to check it as it comes into being, leading it over immediately into the final stage of the movement for E. In this way, we have really formed the I. Take as an example, quote, "Mein Leib ist meine Seele Schrein," close quote, "my body is the shrine of my soul." Do this in such a way that you take into consideration the order of the consonants. First, two sounds of force, then the wave, in quotes, sound, again a sound of force, then a breath sound, followed by three sounds of force, breath sound, wave sound, breath sound, vibrating sound, and lastly, a sound of force. Now you must fit the I sound satisfactorily in between. You see how these things bring movement and life into eurythmy, but they must be really carefully studied. Now we must try to realize the effect of the sound I when it is specially strongly emphasized. Parenthesis, Fräulein B, will you show us this example? Close parenthesis, Weiden neigen weit und breit. willows are swaying from side to side. You must imagine that this picture of the swaying willows has to be portrayed in paradigmatic language. Parenthesis, I have omitted the word sich, close parenthesis. Thus we have V, English V, breath sound, and then D, N, N, G, and again N, all sounds of force. Again, the breath sound V, followed by four sounds of force, T, N, D, and B. Then the vibrating sound R, and lastly T, once more a sound of force. Try now to bring all this into the sentence you are showing, and those of us who are looking on must observe carefully how the characteristic I sound makes its appearance again and again. Weiden neigen weit und breit. We can take still another diphthong, the au. Here again we can let the first movement merge into the second. Try to hold the movement for ah as it first arises, thus checking it when it is about half formed, and leading it over into the U. Make an ah forward, and then turn it aside before reaching the final position, finishing with the movement for U. When you pass over directly from the ah to the U, you get the movement for au. But this movement, although correct, will always lack character if we merely pass over from one sound into the other. The effect will not be sufficiently strong. On the other hand, when you carry out the movement in such a way that you begin to form the ah sound with one arm, at the same time bringing the other arm into contact with the body, thus forming a U, then you do this. Then you have a characteristic au. This is not the only way of thinking U, excuse me, of making U, bringing the arms together, but I have also made a U when I simply stand up and touch the body with the left arm, bringing it slowly downward. Try to show these words in your rhythm. Laut, baut, rau. The point here is not the sense of the words. It is simply a rhythmic exercise. All this must, of course, be studied. Naturally, you can make au in all kinds of ways. For instance, you can make it by simply bringing one arm into contact with the body, parenthesis, right arm in the position for ah, left arm laid across the breast, close parenthesis. You must try really to penetrate into the spirit of these things. Now, in order to enter further into the forms of the sounds and their connection with language, let us take the sound ö, as in bird. The movement is similar to the O, but accompanied by a spring. The O movement is, as it were, torn apart. This tearing of the O movement must be carried out with a certain lightness and grace, and now add the spring. The spring must be made just as the O movement is broken. Now we will make the sound A. First make an ah and then an a. Make the ah with the legs in such a way that you step from the front backward, at the same time making a with the arms. Then you get the movement for a. There still remains the u. It is a u, but its special characteristic is that it is carried out with the backs of the hands laid against each other, thus indicating the e sound also. You must show the U, the U with the feet, and at the same time, you must suggest an E in the movement of the arms. Instead of making an E in this way, stretched movement, it must be shown more like this. Parenthesis, backs of hands together, one slipping past the other, close parenthesis. Then you have the U. Take this sentence in order to see how beautiful it is when the U sounds are really brought out. Prüfe dich, Schüler, übe mit Mühe. Test thyself, pupil. Practice with diligence. These words might well be taken as a eurythmus motto. Prüfe dich, Schüler, übe mit Mühe. In this way, we enter into the true nature of those sounds, which we feel to be made up of more than one element. What then do these diphthongs represent in language? Where do we have a diphthong? Where a modified vowel? What do the modified vowels represent in language? Wherever we have the diphthongs or modified vowels, we have some such feeling as this. Now everything is becoming vague, indistinct, and nebulous. This very often occurs when the singular becomes plural. For instance, one brother, Bruder, makes a quite definite impression. But if we take the plural, that is to say several brothers, Bruder, the feeling immediately becomes more indefinite. Thus the modified vowel represents impressions which are less sharply defined, and the same may be said with regard to the diphthongs. If we enter into the nature of the diphthongs, we shall always find that something is present which cannot be looked upon as being entirely in the singular, but we are, as it were, given an impression of the plural, of things which are interwoven, bound together, or separated one from the other. We must always look for this in the diphthongs. This is why in eurythmy it is so wonderful when the directly visible movements which we have for ah or for e, for example, take on in the movements for the diphthongs something of a fluidic nature, something shading off into the indefinite. Eurythmy is really able to bring to expression the deepest elements of sound and language. Thus we see how the character of the individual sounds comes to visible expression in the movements for eurythmy. Let us try the following exercise. We will ask Frau Sch and Fräulein S to stand here, you, Fräulein S, making the sounds E, A, U in succession, and you, Frau Sch, making the two remaining vowels, A and O. Now, in order to show the exercise quite clearly, will you, Fräulein S, make an E, and you, Fräulein Sch, S-E-H, follow this with an A, and so on, alternately, A, O, U. Do this in such a way that the character of the sounds is brought clearly to expression. Let us go back to the beginning and see what it is that we are doing. Fräulein S, E, Fräulein S-E-H, A. The eurythmist making E enters right into the form of the movement, while the eurythmist making ah creates, as it were, the movement from outside. While Fräulein S makes the E sound, there is a flashing of fire, a flashing of fire outward. This could, of course, also be done with the hand. When Fräulein S-C-H makes an ah, she attracts to herself from without the clouds and the winds. You see how warmth, fire, lies in the sound E, and how form lies in the sound ah. In the former you have a radiating outward, and in the latter a plastic form-giving element. Thus Fräulein S has shown us the true Dionysus, the Dionysian vowels, and Fräulein S.C.H. the true Apollo, the Apollonian vowels. This is clearly to be seen when the movements are properly carried out. So that one may say that when a poem consists mainly of the vowels O and A, it is a plastic poem, a poem with little movement, an Apollonian poem. On the other hand, when a poem consists mainly of the vowels E, U, and A, the fire element is predominant. It is a Dionysian poem. Thus you see how very much may be expressed between the lines. One has only to say to Fräulein S, make an E or an A, and to Fräulein S.C.H., make an A or an O. And one has really said, you are a child of Dionysus, or you are a child of Apollo. In other words, we may see in these vowels something of the cult of Dionysus, something of the cult of Apollo. When one really experiences such things as these, it becomes possible through eurythmy to draw out in the most wonderful way the inherent characteristics of speech and to enter into the whole being of man. Breath sounds ha, sh, y, ch, s, f, v, letting oneself go with the outer world. Sounds of force, d, t, b, p, g, k, m, an assertion of one's inner being. Vibrating sound, R. Wave sound, L. End of Lecture 7.